RadioTheBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, September 20th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for this hump day edition of the show. One guest today, that is Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat college football week four, NFL week three with him. Later on in today's show, I'll tell you about some things going on over at BangTheBook.com and also talk a little bit of Major League Baseball here. We haven't had too much MLB talk lately. I'll try to do that on Wednesdays as I can. We have a lot of regular guests. We have a lot of stuff to get to when it comes to college football and the NFL. So, try and work a little bit of baseball in here as we got about, a week and a half or so left of the MLB season. And then, of course, we'll be carrying over on into the playoffs, which regular listeners of Bang the Book Radio know, or those that follow me on Twitter at Skating Tripods, are fully aware that I have a lot invested in the Major League Baseball playoffs this year with my Cleveland Indians. So we will try to talk about that as time permits here on the show. We'll go ahead and bring on today's first guest, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, bud?
Everything's going great. I'm excited for this week. We got something new going on at Wager Talk. I'll touch into that a little bit later. Just on a side note, I've got some friends that went back to Cleveland and wanted to catch an Indians game. Yes, you would know it. The only game they show up for was the one that killed the streak. So that's the way it is at Cleveland. You go back and you want to see a winner, and the game you show up for is the loser. But I think they've won every game since. So it's pretty much how it goes for us Clevelanders.
Well, whatever you have to do to make sure that they don't show up at a playoff game, please make sure that you do it. That's all I'm asking.
No playoff games for these guys.
All right, we've got a lot of things to get to here in college football and in the NFL. And here's something I want to touch on that I talked about with Sports Chitty yesterday, and I presume you guys probably touched on it in the Tuesday meeting a little bit. Central Florida, Miami, Florida State, very, very unique situations for those three teams. They play one game, then they're effectively off for 2 weeks. Couldn't practice really for that first week that they were off with Hurricane Irma that was going through. So how are you approaching those three teams this week? Because all of them actually have kind of compelling and interesting games.
Yeah, they do. From a Florida State standpoint, I think it's great because obviously you lose your starting quarterback. You got a new quarterback coming in, has been untested, and they were supposed to have played Miami. Now they've kicked that back, and now they've got more time to practice with them. I think it's a positive for Florida State. Central Florida, from a betting perspective, if you're looking to go against Central Florida, I think there has some advantages because the last game anybody remembers from them was a game that crushed the opposition. So you're going to get a lot of people thinking, well, Central Florida, without realizing that they've only played the one game, and they're going to say, well, they're really good. So I think we might get some point spread movement out of that. The Miami, I'm not sure. Don't know anything about what's been going on there other than what you would assume is going on when you have a hurricane come in. So I don't have any news on the Miami, but I think you'll probably catch Florida State at a bargain price and maybe a bargain price going against Central Florida.
Well, and looking here at Florida State, they have been the preferred side early on in the betting market. This number up from 12 to 13 at Pinnacle, up from 11.5 to 13 on the opener at Chris. And I mean, that's not a significant move by any means. We're not talking about key numbers. We're not talking about this thing going up to 14 or on through 14. But it does look like some people out there in the betting market do share your sentiment on the Seminoles. USC is a really interesting one UCF is a really interesting one. They got steamed heavily in week one after getting steamed all year long last year, which is something that Cheeto mentioned on yesterday's show. They were the sharp side in that game that got canceled against Memphis. Or was it Georgia Tech, whichever one it was. And then, now we're seeing them here getting 3.5, extra juice on that side. So that seems like one where, I don't know, what kind of line movement do you think we see in that Central Florida-Maryland game?
What game number does that happen to be?
We're looking at 333, 334.
Right, sorry about that. My computer's down right now. I got to use my own notes.
You got to go old school.
I made that line. I'm old. Got to go old school. I made the line 3.5 there in that game, Central Florida and Maryland. Maryland's another one. The last time we really saw Maryland play, they looked great. So this is one of the games. To me, it's incomplete information. As they would say back when you're in grade school, you get an incomplete. I don't know what to make of either one of these games or one of these teams. So I'm probably just going to sit back and watch it. But you got both teams that looked really good early on in the times that we could take a look at them, but we don't know what's been going on since. The Big Ten as a whole has been a little bit disappointing. The lesser teams have actually been more impressive than the best teams in the Big Ten, so that maybe we're getting a little bit more parity come there. But Central Florida going up to Maryland, this is a game, and I'd like to get more information. It's just a game that I'm probably looking to stay away from.
All right, let's look at game 351, 352 a little bit more here, which is that Toledo-Miami game. Miami also with a new quarterback this year. Brad Kaya decided to – I don't know if he was a senior or if he decided to go to the NFL draft, but they have a new quarterback as well. They played Bethune-Cookman, 141-13. They were a big favorite against Arkansas State, but that game didn't get played. They would have been about a touchdown dog at Florida State if that game hadn't gotten postponed, or at least that's what the look-ahead line – I think the look-ahead line was 6 for that game. So Miami also trying to break in a new quarterback, trying to, you know, go through some offensive changes of their own. Toledo, a team that you obviously know very well, being an expert in the MAC, and we'll talk some MAC games here in a little bit. 54-51 last week against Tulsa. Real shootout, real thriller. This is a tough game to look at because I think from an athleticism and a talent standpoint, Toledo's not that far off the pace from Miami, but Miami, a team that was very highly rated and a lot of power ratings coming into the season, it kind of feels like this number might be a little bit high. But again, we have one data point from Miami, and it was against an FCS team.
Yeah, exactly. And I made this line 15 based on pure talent and in with my power ratings. But when you take a look at Toledo, they've been an excellent underdog on the road going back to 2010, 3-2, 2-1, 4-0, 3-1, 1-2, 2-0, 2-1. They go into Nevada earlier. They were favored in that game, but they ended up covering that game. But Toledo's been very good on the road. They've had a history of getting up to play better teams. They do have Nevada and Tulsa in their pocket, two games, you know, against teams that can put some points on the board. So defensively, they've seen some pretty good offenses coming out of there, especially Tulsa, who put up 51 against them last week in the shootout, and they were actually able to win that game. The Miami game, first game really out with against a decent team here. I don't know what to expect. This is another game where my number says possibly Miami. Stats show that Toledo's up for the challenge, but without really knowing what we have out of Miami, it's just because the game's on the board doesn't mean you have to bet it.
I wonder, maybe this is a game that we're going to talk about when we discuss overreactions, but you brought up a point that I want to hit on here, and Oklahoma State is obviously the team that stands out the most to me in terms of they're a team that's finally going to get challenged this week. Now, they may pass that challenge with flying colors, but they're finally going to play somebody. Toledo here, you know, Elon, not a whole lot to write home about. Turns out that Nevada, you know, who played well against Northwestern, covered that number easily, wasn't much resistance for the Rockets in Reno. Tulsa, a decent team, an awful defense. They got a good offense, but an awful defense. This is a really big test for Toledo. So now that we're getting into four of the college football season, we have some teams that are like that, that just up to this point haven't really played anybody. How do you generally approach teams like that, that, you know, it feels like they're going to get a big test for the first time?
Well, you got to keep in mind that Toledo's got a bye next week before conference action starts. And normally, Toledo's the team to beat in the MAC this year, so that's their goal in the season. If they were playing Miami right before playing the conference action, they may not take it as seriously, but as I said, Toledo's played very well. That's something you have to look at, and which is the reason why you've got to pay more attention to those games when you're playing weaker competition, and then you step up. I know, you know, I'm no college basketball expert by any means, but I know early in the season you play a lot of non-conference games and a team might come out and they have a 5-0 record, but they really haven't played anybody. Then all of a sudden they play a decent team and they get crushed. It happens all the time in college basketball. It's something you have to be aware of. But Toledo's not – they're not going to be totally outmanned in this game. They've, like I said, they've played pretty well against the big boys in the past, so they know what to expect. And, you know, they had the starters coming back that have been there before. Last year they went to BYU. You know, the year before they traveled to Arkansas. So the Arkansas game, they actually win that game 16-12. And last year at BYU, they only lose 55-53. And if you remember, that game was on a Friday night. And that was could have been one of the most exciting games of the season, and that 55 points to BYU may be the total for the amount they score all year this season.
All right, I want to talk about overreaction lines here, and actually it looks like some of them are moving around a little bit on the odds screen here as we're talking. These are games I did touch on with Sports Cheetah yesterday, but I do sometimes like to crowdsource opinions on some of the really interesting games. The first one here is Mississippi State and Georgia. Mississippi State's now down to a 4.5-point dog pretty much across the market. This one opened 6.5. Some places had it 7. Now it's starting to come down with Mississippi State getting a little bit of love, as I said, 4.5 points. Again, a move from 6.5 to 4.5 isn't necessarily the most earth-shattering thing in the world, but it does look like as limits are increasing a little bit here throughout the week, as more syndicates and big betting groups are getting involved, Mississippi State appears to be the preferred side. Kind of takes me a little bit by surprise. What about you?
Yeah, I've got Georgia 6.5 in this game. Looking to play Georgia. I think Georgia's the better team, obviously. And once it gets down to basically 3, 3.5, they're telling you basically the teams are equal. Mississippi State's gotten off to a great start against the Louisiana Tech team, who's actually pretty good. They played Western Kentucky last week. Western Kentucky's not the same as they were, but they were able to beat them 57-21. So that's pretty impressive there, going on the road and doing that. And then they played LSU last week and win that game 37-7. So they're a team that is popular in the public eye right now. I don't know about your power ratings. I only raised Mississippi State 2.5 points in my power ratings, which is actually a decent size upgrade after 2 weeks. But still, at that at those numbers right there, I have Georgia being the better team here. And that's a team I would prefer to bet. Although Georgia being a favorite, I'd much rather have them as an underdog. But you go back and, you know, they beat App State at home 31-10. We're shutting them out at the half, so that was a pretty good game. And then they go into Notre Dame, which is actually a pretty good team. They're usually overrated, but and they win that game as an underdog. Everybody and their brother were on the Georgia side in that game, and of course, they win that game 20-19. Samford last week, whereas Mississippi State had to play a physical LSU game, even more reason to play Georgia in this game. And when you take a look at the schedule last year, they didn't play Mississippi State last year because they're not in their division, didn't play them the year before. So I think the value is coming in on Georgia. I've raised Georgia 2 points, so I've been impressed with Georgia also. Mississippi State a little bit more, but still I think the line is getting to the point now where you'd have to look at the home favorite.
Let's go to game 309, 310 in rotation order, Wake Forest and Appalachian State. The reason I want to talk about this one is I am surprised, honestly, to see money coming in on Wake Forest here today. Pinnacle now up to 5.5, blew right through 5 yesterday, and then on up into 5.5 today. BetOnline's been sitting at 6 on this game, actually, for about a full day now. I'm surprised to see this. I mean, I know Dave Clawson's done a really good job, and Dave Clawson, a guy that you know very well as the former head coach at Bowling Green. This is one of those spots to me where I look at Wake Forest, and it's sort of one of those games that falls into the category we talked about earlier in the sense that they haven't played anybody. And Appalachian State is a somebody.
I agree. This is one of the games that we had a pretty much a consensus at the Tuesday meeting. I made the line pick 'em here, and nobody could understand why Wake has taken all that money. The reason why they've taken them is because they've looked good against bad football teams. Boston College, they win that game 34-10, 21-7 at the half, gained it by 1.1 yards in the half. But this Boston College team, they're trying to beat up the office. To me, it's a terrible decision by Boston College overall. But they've had one of the best defenses in college football. Their offense hasn't done anything. Now they're trying to speed up the bad offense, which puts the defense on the field more often. I think it's idiotic way to do things, and so far Boston College is paying the price, as Boston College isn't looking nearly as well as they were in the past. For those who haven't followed me, I do virtually all my stats on first halves, because that's when both teams have the game plan. They come out, they're trying to do the same thing. Second half of the game, one team's throwing the ball all over the place where they normally don't. The other team's just running to take out the clock. So most of the stats I use are in first halves. Wake Forest, in the first two games, they've had three drives starting in opponent territory. Now, that's very high. Usually, you'll probably have, between the two games, maybe one. So the short fields definitely helped that offense. I don't think it's nearly as good as what it is. They played, like I said, a Boston College who's trying something new and a Utah State team who is not very good. They look good against those two teams, but now they're playing an Appalachian State team. And I know App State's been – most people think they're down this year, although I've dropped them maybe 1.5 in my power ratings on the season. But they play Georgia week one. We've already talked about how much I like Georgia. Last week they played Texas State. And Texas State is considered to be one of the worst teams in college football, which they end up could be. But I've been impressed by Texas State. Texas State has done well by my means so far this year. Just last week in the game against Appalachia State, they outgained them in the first half 5.2 to 3.6. They were led 10-7. App State did come back to win that game, but they didn't come close to covering. And when you lose games by double digits, which is what Appalachian State has done the first two times they've played, they've lost games by double digits against the spread. Nobody's going to want to buy them. People are realizing that maybe this isn't the Appalachian State that beat Michigan in the past and made all big name for themselves, but they've been found out. They're not quite as good as what they are, but I'm not so sure that Wake Forest, before the season started, Wake Forest was a team, and I don't bet season win numbers, but Wake Forest was a team I was looking to fade. And they've come out against two what I consider not very good teams. They look great. That's why they're taking the money. But I will be on the App State side. Let the rest of the guys bring that up to 7, and that'll be a best bet for me. Maybe even do it at 6.
All right, a couple of games I want to touch on here from the Big 12. 383, 384, TCU and Oklahoma State. We talked about this last week. Oklahoma State, the stock was very high in them for that game against Pitt. We saw money come in on the Pitt side. And that was a bet that you could light on fire by the end of the first quarter because Mason Rudolph just came out and looked like a Heisman Trophy candidate and blew the doors off of Pitt, and that was that. Now, you look at this game this week, and we've seen some TCU buyback come in here over the last couple of days. This number was 12. It actually touched 13 at a couple of shops out there. Now it's down to 11. This is a line that in the games of the year was Oklahoma State minus 4.5 down at the Golden Nugget when it opened. So, you know, I mean, I get bumping Oklahoma State up a little bit. They've looked like an upper echelon top college football team so far this year. But I also don't think that you can downgrade TCU for anything that they've done. So this looks like one of those overreaction lines here in week four.
I was on that Pitt game with you last week. I think 90% of the guys that I discussed with were all on Pitt last week. And as you pointed out, they just didn't have the speed to keep up with the wide receivers at Oklahoma State. But I don't know if I want to stand in the way of Oklahoma State. I made this line 11, so I think the line is about what I thought it should be. But take an interesting stat for Oklahoma State. I talk a lot about teams getting the ball in opponent territory. The last 3 weeks in the first half, Tulsa, they score 38 against Tulsa. South Alabama, they score 20 against South Alabama. Pittsburgh, as unfortunately we all know, they scored 49 first-half points against Pittsburgh. Out of all those drives, how many did they start in the opponent territory? Zero. Zero drives in opponent territory, and they still put up 38, 20, and 49 points in the first half. That means they've gone long distances on their drives. Mostly in the first week, their average starting field position was the 25-yard line. Week two was the 24-yard line. Week three was the 23-yard line. Teams going on the 23, 24, and 25-yard lines are not supposed to be putting up those many touchdowns. This is an offense that right now I'm not standing in the way of it. TCU is a very good team, and they are stepping up to play TCU here. But the line, at least in my regard, is where it should be. If it drops any more, I will be on Oklahoma State. If it gets down to below 10, I think that's probably a nice bargain there. But at this point, we're doing a video on it, and I have to make a decision on the video. But at this point, I'm leaning on Oklahoma State in this game. That when a team is in rhythm and the other team doesn't have the athletes to keep up, they're unstoppable. We will see what the TCU athletes have. They only allowed 7 against the Arkansas team, and they allowed 22 – excuse me. They only allowed 7 against Arkansas, and they allowed 36 last week to SMU in a game that obviously meant more to SMU. TCU was blindsided early on, and then as the game went on, the better team started distancing themselves. But it is a telling game for Oklahoma State, just for what it's worth. We got together with a few other guys and we put in a bet on the quarterback for Oklahoma State to win the Heisman. We found 7-1. Then get by this game. They got Texas Tech, Baylor, Texas, West Virginia, Oklahoma is going to be the major games for them. They do play Kansas State later on in the season, which is a very good defense. But as long as Oklahoma State is winning, Rudolph's got a chance to win the Heisman, and it's 7-1. I thought that was a pretty good bargain.
Now, I do want to ask you about this. From a power rating standpoint, nobody touches Alabama, although Clemson is closing that gap pretty quickly as far as I'm concerned. Where do you put Oklahoma State? I mean, are they up there for you around USC and Oklahoma? How far up do you actually have them in your power ratings?
I've got them at a 90. Hold on, I'll check what I've got Oklahoma in. I've got Oklahoma at 94. My best team is Alabama at 99.5. But I do have some serious concerns about Alabama. If you saw that game last week, Alabama's had some injuries. They've lost some guys on the defensive line and in the secondary and in linebackers. And Colorado State, a good offensive team, was just running the ball down their throat. You look over the stats so far this season in the first half, Alabama's really struggled on defense. Their offense is still outstanding, but I don't think this is the same Alabama team. Obviously, key injuries. They've got depth. Obviously, they got depth there, but I think we're going to make some money going against Alabama at certain points this season until they correct that.
All right, let's go to Oklahoma and Baylor. And I don't want to say that this is an overreaction line necessarily because, look, I mean, Baylor has looked about as bad as you possibly can. They've got injured at the quarterback position. New Solomon's got a concussion. Zach Smith came out as a starter last week and looked absolutely awful. But this was a game that at the Golden Nugget prior to the season was Oklahoma -8 in the games of the year lines. It was 28.5 yesterday when I looked. It's down to 27.5 now. So a little bit of sharp investment on Baylor in this spot because no public money is going to come in on Baylor. But can you remember a game that's 20 points higher just 4 weeks into the season than what the game of the year line was?
It happens once in a while. Every few years you'll get something. Most of it is because of injuries. I actually listened to that Baylor game. I was in the car last week. And you get a different perspective when you're listening to the hometown announcers in these games. Much better than when you're watching on TV, when you've got guys that come in and just the only time they know anything about the team is the week they're studying them. Baylor is a team. I think they're getting a little bit better on defense. They did allow 34 last week, but they allowed 17 to UTSA. Slightly better on defense. Offensively, you're right. The quarterbacks are not very good. They're actually not brought in for this type of offense. But Baylor does have a couple breakaway receivers. And if they can hit those receivers, they can get the big plays. Actually, on the season, despite Baylor losing 17-10 to UTSA and 34-20, to Duke, they actually have more explosive plays than the opposition, 9 explosive plays, and they've allowed 8. That's how Baylor will be able to cover or at least keep games close, is with that long passing game, hitting one out of every 5 passes long or something to that effect. But keep in mind, Oklahoma's played 3 games so far, including at Ohio State. They have 25 explosive plays. They've only allowed 4. So Baylor in this game is going to be looking to throw the ball long. That's how they're going to try to keep up. But Oklahoma State just does not give up explosive plays. They only give up 1 explosive play to Ohio State. Now, granted, the Buckeyes' offenses look terrible this year, but it's still Ohio State playing at home. Last week they gave up 2 to Tulane, and UTEP only got 1. So they're just dominating in the big play regard. And, in fact, Oklahoma's put up 35, 3, and 28 in their first halves. They've yet to have a drive start in opponent territory. So this is a very good offense for Oklahoma. Baylor, I think, is going to take them out of what they're doing. My number on this game is only 23, so I'm probably not going to play it because you're playing a premium to play Oklahoma in this game. But it would not surprise me if we see another 45 to 10 game, 45 to 7, because Oklahoma State's defensive backs don't allow big plays. And that's the only way I could see Baylor being competitive in this game.
All right, let's get to the MAC here. Let's talk about your bread and butter. You are a conference expert in the MAC. And before we get into the two games that I sent over to you, because I definitely want to talk about those, one of those was actually a listener question. Kent State, So Kent State is a 44-point underdog this week against Louisville, against a pissed-off Louisville team that played that didn't play well last week against Clemson. So that's part of the sentiment here. But Nick Holley, Kent State's fifth-year senior quarterback, done for the season with a torn ACL. You know these MAC teams better than most other people out there in the market, if not all the people out there in the market. How much of an adjustment did you make to your Kent State power rating with Holley's injury?
Well, he's been injured most of the season, and he's – I hate to make a general judgment, but he's the best player on that offensive team. They've got some other guys. Maybe it's just the people they're surrounded by, but they're not very productive. They scored 3 points against Clemson and were shut out at Marshall. So the offense is bad, and your best offensive player is gone. What difference will that make in changing what your thoughts are when you've only scored 3 points in the first half, or 3 points in the game, in the first two games? Your offense hasn't been very good anyway. Now, the problem is, without him in the lineup, you're going to go three and out a lot more, which is going to set up Louisville for better field position. And the last 2 weeks, Louisville hasn't had good field position against North Carolina. They started on the 19, Clemson started on the 20. So they had long fields to cover. I don't think they're going to have that problem against Kent State here. And keep in mind, Kent State, when they played Clemson in that first week, if there was ever a game where you could tell somebody came in for the paycheck, that was the Golden Flashes. They never even tried to throw the ball on Clemson. They were down on their own 20-yard line. They would run it into the line three straight times just to get the hell out of there without getting anybody injured. I see more of that going up here against Louisville. My number on this game is only 36.5, but there's no way I could play Kent State in this game. You've got a Louisville team, as you said. No look ahead. They got Murray State on deck, just coming off that Clemson game, losing that game 21-47. So, you know, it's a one-way ticket for me. It'd either be Louisville or nothing. But how motivated is Louisville in this game? I don't know. They've definitely got the ability to just name the score here. And Kent doesn't see these type of quarterbacks, you know, in the MAC, the scrambling quarterbacks and the two-dimensional quarterbacks of what he can accomplish. I won't be on Kent. Your best bet may be to play a Kent under points if you could find something like that out there, because Louisville's defense is not to Clemson standards, but it's very good. And you can't score against Marshall, it's not looking good for you. They did average 5.1 yards per play in the first half last week against Marshall. They just couldn't get the ball in the end zone. That benefits Kent if you like Kent, as they can actually get the ball down the field a little bit longer and limit the Louisville scoring drives, make them go a little bit farther. But I don't want anything to do with Kent. Kent's, as we say sometimes when a team burns you, Kent's on your list. I think Kent is on my list, at least for now, until I could find out how they do well offensively without Holley.
All right, we had a listener question here on the game between Ohio University and Eastern Michigan from at Coach Koppel on Twitter. Says that Solich typically strong in the underdog role, and he is in the underdog role here this week. Eastern Michigan, 2.5-point favorite in this one. I got to say, you know, in looking just in general at the MAC card this week, Ohio and Miami of Ohio, the two favorites in the MAC East, both of them short dogs against marginal middle-of-the-road MAC West teams. That doesn't speak to a whole lot of confidence in the MAC East, but on this game specifically here, Eastern Michigan, 2.5-point favorite.
Over the last decade, Frank Solich is an away dog, including the loss this year to Purdue, 16-16-1 against the spread. They did go 3-0 last year and 2-1 the year before, smaller sample sizes. So I like Frank Solich when he's going up against the major conferences. Obviously he's coached at Nebraska. He knows about playing major football. I think the team gets up for him when he goes out and plays a team from a major conference. So I like Ohio as a dog when they're playing teams that are much better than them. But as I say, they played that Purdue game and they lost 45-21 on that Friday a couple of weeks ago. And they actually, money came in on Ohio late in that game. I made it 5.5, and I bet down to, I believe, 2.5, 3. I couldn't understand the line move, and obviously my number was right in that game. Not going to be all the time, but it was right in that game. But you've got an Ohio team coming off of playing Kansas, and anytime a team plays Kansas, they're going to look good. It's ridiculous how bad a team from a major conference has been all this time. I don't know if I've said it in this past, but we used to joke that the fatter the coach, the better the coach, because and when Mangini was over there at Kansas, the guy was even bigger than I am, and he got fired. A lot of it is he's not a great speaker with his press conferences, but if you go back, maybe other than the Notre Dame coach that went on to coach the Patriots, other than that, every fat coach is done very well. Being a fat man, I have a tendency to root for the fat guys. And they've got to do more in their industry than a guy who's a good-looking guy like a Nick Saban in shape or an Urban Meyer. You know, they're classic good looks, and you know they're thin and pretty well built. You get the heavy-set guys; they've got to do more to be able to keep their job. And look what Kansas has done since Mangini is gone, or not Mangini? Is that his name?
Mangino. Mark Mangino.
Mangino. Yeah, Mangini was the coach of the Browns. I actually think Mangini should be another NFL coach, but Mangino, I'm sorry about that. But, yeah, look what they've done since he's been gone. They just continually lose, and lose. And Ohio last week looked good against them, scoring 8.7 yards per play in the first half. But they only, in explosive plays in that game, they only gained them 6-5. So I'm not a big believer in Ohio. I made this line Eastern Michigan 3. So it's basically right where I thought it was. Eastern Michigan's got the extra week off. They did go to Rutgers and win that game. They played Charlotte week 1. So they're not very well tested as well. But you get them a week off, and now they're playing an Ohio team that I think Ohio's down this year. And so before that game against Purdue, they were talking. I was listening to the beginning of the game, and the announcer said that Ohio is the team to beat in the MAC. And I said, they're getting different information than what I'm getting, because they're going to be a good MAC team, probably a fourth or fifth best in the conference, but they're not the best team in the MAC.
What's really challenging about this game for me, and I understand what you're saying, and I completely agree with everything you're talking about, but Eastern Michigan went 7-6 last year. From 2012 to 2015, they had 7 total wins. So this is a team that, you know, when you look at them in a favorite role, I think you have to have some concerns just because they're trying to develop this ability to win games. And I give them credit for winning that game on the road at Rutgers. That's a very, very nice win for them. Rutgers had some things going on. Offensive coordinator Jerry Kill had another seizure. You know, there were some things going on there for Rutgers in that particular spot. But this is, I think, one of those classic examples of you have a name brand team in the MAC in Ohio who, you know, they haven't won the MAC, I think, in what, 20 years, 30 years, something like that. But they find themselves in the conference title game. They tend to play well, you know, in those MACtion spots against an Eastern Michigan team that, you know, just had a winning season and just went to a bowl game for the first time since 1987. So I think that's kind of the thing that holds me up in this game, is that there are expectations on Eastern Michigan now. And I think this line in particular, and this game in particular, is an example of that.
Well, since Chris Creighton came to Ypsilanti, they're 3-3. The last 3-plus years as a favorite, 3-3 against the spread as a favorite. So they've had some opportunities, you know, against Charlotte. They only laid 14, and they won that game by 17. It took them a second-half surge to get there. They're up by 10 at the half. But keep in mind, Eastern Michigan, Ralph Michaels, his son was in college. I believe he was going to Miami. And obviously, since his father is into this, he's into this, and he's a big fan of college football. And he had some friends that he went to high school with that ended up going to play football at Eastern Michigan. And last year they were 7-6. The year before they were 1-11. But before that year, 2015, we were getting reports out of Eastern Michigan that the talent level and the depth on this team were much stronger than at any time that they could remember. They were recruiting very good players from the high school ranks. So the team was getting better. And the unfortunate part was for Eastern Michigan in the 2015 season was they had a lot of injuries. So at the beginning of the season, 2015, they played Old Dominion week 1, and they lose 34-38, and they cover the number. The next week they go to Wyoming as a 13.5-point favorite. They win 48-29. Then the injuries hit, and they only covered, I believe, two more games the rest of the season. So now they've got everybody healthy. They've got an extra year of bringing in quality recruits. And then last year they go 7-6 on the season. And they scored 29.6, gave up 29.8. So they may, you know, if you're looking at that, they probably should have been in a 6-6 team, but they were able to win the bowl game. 7-6 on the season. They were actually 7-5 going into the bowl game against Old Dominion. They lost that one. But this is a team who's been building the right way, and now you've got a coach who's been there for his fourth year. They've gone through the tough times. There's a lot of excitement about Eastern Michigan. Just a couple of years ago, I remember they built that new field that looks terrible on television. It's supposed to be a cinder wall, and they make the players run through the cinder wall to get to the field. It's the ugliest field in college football. But ever since then, they figure they put money into the system. They're bringing in better recruits. This isn't, as they say, this isn't your father's Eagles team. Eastern Michigan, I consider to be one of the top four teams in the MAC this year. And I'm looking to bet on them. A lot of people still feel, they look back at 2014, they won 10. 2015, they win 11. The 2 years prior, 22 or 12 and 13, they only win two games each year. This is a totally different Eastern Michigan team. My line doesn't show that I'm going to be playing this game. As I said, that's three. But I would just warn people who are looking to play against Eastern Michigan. It's a different team now, different mentality. In football is becoming big at Eastern Michigan.
I may be reaching here a little bit. I don't want to go off on a tangent about this point, but I do want to consider this. So Michigan hires Harbaugh, and you know it becomes – I mean, it's Michigan. It's a household name. It's a blue blood program. It's a nationally recruited program. But with Harbaugh, you know, he's probably looking more in those recruiting hotbeds. California, he's obviously got ties out there with his job at Stanford. Texas, everyone's looking to recruit out of Texas. Florida, everyone's looking to recruit out of Florida. You have these hotbeds. He's trying to steal guys from Ohio to kind of pull one over on Urban Meyer. And you've got some pretty good prep players there in the Detroit area. And you kind of wonder sometimes if, you know, the big brother program like a Michigan, like an Ohio State, that type of thing, you know, there's only a limited number of scholarships to go around. So if you start getting these superior athletes from these outside states, some of those kids that are really good players in Detroit, they're not going to want to go that far away from home. They're going to have grown up wishing they could play for Michigan. Scholarships aren't there. They'll go to those directional Michigan schools. PJ Fleck did a great job doing that at Western Michigan. With him gone, maybe some of those kids go to Eastern. Maybe some of those kids go to Central. Maybe Michigan State, you know, is on an upswing here at some point over the next couple of years. So I think that's kind of something worth watching a little bit too, is that, you know, when the biggest name program in the state becomes such a national program from a recruiting standpoint, maybe some of the little brothers are going to get a little bit better.
Definitely. And that's a great point. If you're playing in Texas or you're playing in Florida, you probably wouldn't give much thought to go to Michigan. But once you get to Michigan, that's a team now that, you know, that they were right on the verge of playing in the Final Four last year. You had a legendary coach who not only coached in college football and made a name for himself, he's been in the NFL. He's taken his teams to Paris and London and all over before the season starts. That's something you want to be a part of. And it would have been a second thought before then. So while he's out canvassing the entire country, the other schools in the state of Michigan got a chance to pick up some pretty good football players.
All right, let's touch on game 339-340, Miami of Ohio and Central Michigan. We'll stay here in the MAC. Miami of Ohio cost me a middle last week with their – I had them at pick, and I came back on Cincinnati at +5, had that game, threw an inexplicable pick six, and Cincinnati wound up pulling off that victory. Devastating loss for Miami. I know that now they go into conference play. They take on Central Michigan. It's a game they want. It's a game they need if they want to win the MAC East. But that's a hard loss to overcome, man. I mean, that's not necessarily a rivalry game, but Cincinnati has dominated the matchups between those two teams. Do you think Miami of Ohio can get off the deck and avoid a hangover this week as a 2.5-point dog?
The Miami-Cincinnati is definitely a rivalry game. I actually had Cincinnati last week, so I'm sorry to hear you lose your medal, but I was very happy with the way the game ended. Miami, Xavier, and Cincinnati are all very close to each other. So anytime the three of them play, Xavier obviously doesn't have a Division I football team, but anytime the three of those play, it's a big deal, especially for Miami and Xavier. Cincinnati probably views them as a smaller brother, doesn't take it as seriously, but when you started the year, the way Cincinnati has, I think the game meant a little bit more to them last week. They gained some confidence when they played up against Michigan earlier. Michigan did not move the ball very well against Cincinnati. Well, let's just say they didn't get it in the end zone against Cincinnati. And I think that brought up the confidence of the Cincinnati players going into that game last week. But, yeah, you're right. It's got to be a tough loss for Miami against Cincinnati. They lose that game 21-17. They lost to Marshall 31-26. So they play two Division I schools or two FBS schools, and they're 0-2 after the big, nice run they had last year once they inserted the other quarterback. I made this line on this game, Miami won. So my line is pointing toward Miami, but I was down on Central Michigan. I thought Central Michigan was one of those teams that's going to be overrated. They've come out, they're going to Kansas, and like I said, it's not a major accomplishment to go into Kansas, but they won that game 45-27. They go to Syracuse last week, and I believe they bet Syracuse the week before or 2 weeks before, and they look terrible. Well, they look really good against Central Michigan last week. So you got a Central team I'm not high on, but I've got to tell you, this quarterback for Central Michigan is good. They've been able to bring some back when LeFevre played there, made it to the NFL. I mean, Central Michigan has some pretty good quarterbacks. I didn't expect this out of the Central Michigan quarterback. So while I was down coming into the season, I've been pretty impressed by him so far. The letdown situation for Miami obviously is important, but when you start 0-2 against Division I schools, it probably is a must-win game. Miami's got Notre Dame on deck. And I know the kids would love to knock off Notre Dame. I don't think it's going to happen. This is a game that Miami has to have, but I don't know if I'm – like I said, my number's one, but I'm a little leery of Central Michigan. They may be a little bit better than what I expected them to be.
All right, we'll flip over to the NFL side here. We do have a listener request for Florida and Kentucky analysis. We'll talk about that one tomorrow with either Brad Powers or Ralph Mike, but I want to make sure we get some NFL on here as well, and I realize I'm keeping you longer than usual, Brian, so I do apologize for that. Let's just break down some of these games here. We can kind of work in some of these concepts as we go along. Let's start with the Rams in San Francisco. Rams looked very good in their win over Indianapolis. Indianapolis, not a very good team. Didn't look so good last week against Washington. They moved the football a little bit, but you know, still had some issues in terms of stopping that Washington passing attack. Rams are a 2-point road favorite for Thursday night football against the 49ers. You got two first-year head coaches here, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. You got a young quarterback in Jared Goff, an experienced quarterback who knows Shanahan's system in Brian Hoyer. Surprised to see the money coming in a little bit here on the home dog?
Somewhat. Most of the guys at the Tuesday meeting were slightly leaning towards the Rams here. I always try to look at the home team on these Thursday games. It's so hard in the NFL to prepare on the short week. And now, you know, the Rams got to travel. They were home last. It's not a major travel. They're both in the same state, but they got to go from LA to San Francisco. That's going to cut down on their practice time. The home teams in non-divisional games have a distinct advantage on Thursday. Obviously, the Rams and the 49ers know each other well, so it's a little bit lessened this week. So hopefully we'll see a decent game on Thursday. It's been ridiculous how bad the offenses have been in these Thursday games. Obviously, you've had some pretty good defense. You had the Ravens play last week. But I like the Rams. I think the Rams can possibly become a wild card team this year. I think the team's a little bit better than what they've shown. San Francisco, keep in mind last week, San Francisco, first half against Seattle, they outgained Seattle 6.3 to 3.1 in Seattle as a 13.5-point underdog. Does that tell you that San Francisco's all of a sudden figured it out? I think that tells me right now that Seattle's having the same problems that they did last year on that offensive line, and they just don't have the talent, can't protect the quarterback. And Seattle figured that out last year as the season went on and obviously became a very successful team. But right now, any stats you're getting against Seattle, I think you have to take with a little bit of a grain of salt because they have not played well thus far. In the first game, you know, San Francisco plays Carolina. Quarterback for Carolina comes back. He played a little bit in the preseason. He wasn't fully healthy. So they've gone up against two offenses that have struggled a little bit coming out of the gate. They gave up 23 to Carolina and 12 to Seattle in that game. So the 49ers are a little bit better than I think what people thought they are, but don't go out and buy into the 49ers based on the teams they played so far, because those teams had legitimate reasons to struggle offensively when they played the Niners. The Rams are the better team here, but I don't like to play road teams very often on the Thursday night game. If I had to pick something, I'd probably go with the Rams, but I just think they're the better team and they would find a way to win. But luckily, there's other games to play this weekend and we don't have to put our money on the line.
All right, let's go to Sunday here. We got a kegs and eggs matchup in London between Baltimore and Jacksonville. You can go ahead and get your day started nice and early. I don't want to break down the game specifically. I want to talk to you more about how you approach these games in London. How does that change your handicapping mindset?
It is a little bit different because Jacksonville is the London home team. They go to Jacksonville every year. Go to London every year. I'm not sure how much of a fan base they have gotten over there because they seem to play there so often. I'm not sure London knows how bad the product is that we keep sending them because we keep sending them Jacksonville. But you've got a Jacksonville team who has been here a lot. They know the routine to get there, and I think that's the major advantage they have. So when you're going, you're traveling, you know what day you leave. You know, you're checking into your hotel. You've got this much time to sightsee. You're going to do this when the game comes. And it's exactly the same thing as it has been every other year. You've got a Baltimore team coming off of two great games. I love this Baltimore defense. I think the offense stinks. So they're pretty high of themselves. Now they get to go to London. Baltimore, first time there that I remember, they don't go every year. It's more of a vacation for Baltimore and their fans and their families. Many times the teams will take their families over to London. That's one of my bucket list things. I've always wanted to go to London. I'm a huge music fan. That's one of the things I want to do before I die. Well, obviously there's a lot of people in this organization who are going to do a lot of sightseeing. How much they're going to be focused on the game, I don't know. Obviously they're a far better team than Jacksonville is. But Jacksonville's got a definite advantage that I don't think is being made enough in the line. So I'm not going to play the game, but I won't be on Baltimore here.
Yeah, this is Jacksonville's fifth game across the pond. They have won their last two. They beat Indianapolis last year, and that was Indianapolis' first game over there. 2 years ago, they beat Buffalo, and that was Buffalo's first game over there as well. So not a large sample size necessarily with this trend, but Jacksonville 2-0 in the last two games against teams that are playing in London for the first time. So that sort of speaks to the betting angle that you're looking at there. One more game I want to touch on with you, Brian. I know that we're kind of running out of steam a little bit here. We already talked about Seattle, so we can save that for a future show. Kansas City and the Los Angeles Chargers. Kansas City here off to a 2-0 start. Very impressive win over New England in week one. Did what they needed to do last week against the Eagles in order to cover that game. The Chargers have had some issues here. A lot of people making a lot of their move to Los Angeles, how it seems to have backfired on them a little bit. Lost their home opener last week, didn't have a great representation from the fan base. What do you see from this game here against Kansas City, with Kansas City right now sitting out there as a 3-point favorite?
excuse me on that. You got a Kansas City team who plays to win the turnover battle. They're very much like New England. It's a team that takes care of the football, and if you win the turnover battle in the NFL, you're going to win the games most of the time. Kansas City is a team that does not turn the ball over. You're playing a San Diego team who is terrible in one score games. They had another one last week. I believe both games so far this year, it's been a one score game that they've lost. Last year they were terrible, and you figure eventually – it'll come back to normal, and the Chargers will be able to get that. But doing it against a team who doesn't turn the ball over may be a problem. You talked about the Chargers' lack of home field advantage. Last year, there was more Miami fans there. Last week, more Miami fans. I don't know if the Chiefs travel as well as Miami does, but there hasn't been a lot of interest. San Diego, obviously, couldn't do enough to keep them there. They let them go, and now they're in L.A. in a 30,000-seat stadium, and they can't even get 30,000 locals to go see them play. Not much of a home field advantage. If I'm going to be playing the Chargers this year, it's going to be on the road. I like them as a road dog. It would be the Chiefs or nothing for me in this game.
Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com, and I said that you guys are starting something new over there. Why don't you tell all of our listeners about it?
Yeah. If you live in Vegas, and actually you don't have to live in Vegas, but you've got to find other ways to supplement your income as opposed to just playing sides and totals, for example, in football games. A couple of things that people out here make a lot of money on is playing second halves in live betting. Excuse me. And this week I'm starting over at WagerTalk.com. You just go to WagerTalk.com. You can sign up. I'm going to have a second half service for college and pro football. Instead of betting against thousands upon thousands of guys as the line goes all week long and betting you against them, in halftime betting, those lines come out. You got basically 10 minutes to bet. You're betting against a certain amount of people going in and betting, getting the opening number. We always talk about getting the best number. You can do that in second half betting by getting in earlier before everybody else can. Like I said, the window is very short. It's a great way to add to your income. If you're sitting around the house and you're able to do that, you're going to watch the games anyway, I would stop by over at Wagertalk. It's going to be free this weekend. Saturday and Sunday, free for anybody who wants to get it. You just go in and register for the text. Once I get my bet in, I'm going to text it out to all clients. It's free. It won't cost you a thing. And it's another way to make money. And these lines move like crazy. And most of the time when they're making the second half line, they're making it off of a chart. They have a chart based on what the first half or what the opening number was, what the score is at the half. But they don't know how the game was played. When you're watching the game, it could have been, you know, a fumble recovery. The team comes in gets the touchdown that way, or just something out of the ordinary, like I talked about Baylor earlier. Maybe Baylor had one of those long passes and scored a touchdown. If you're not paying attention to it, they're just looking at the final scores. So the game doesn't always play out score is at the half, and you could definitely take advantage of that, and we're going to be texting those out. It's the Brian Leonard text service. Second half college football and NFL starts this weekend. It's free. Just go over to WagerTalk.com and sign up.
And I'm sure Brian will be promoting it on his Twitter account at @BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, thank you so much, man. I apologize for keeping you so long and ruining your voice there, but we'll talk to you again next week, and I promise it will be shorter.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
There you go. There's Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Over at BangTheBook.com right now, we got a lot of great things going on. We've got NFL Power Ratings up from Danny Vorgs, his Week 3 update. You can check out what he's got, what he's suggesting here. 8-1 so far through 2 weeks on the plays that his numbers have spit out for the NFL. So good piece to go check out over there. My College Football Power Ratings are also up over at BangTheBook.com. I'll be writing up NASCAR previews here today or tomorrow, depending on whenever the odds get put up for those. We've got those contests that you can join with some monthly cash prizes, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, daily streaker contest. If you recall, somebody won $25,000 in cash over at DSI Sportsbook with their streak challenge by getting to 21 straight games. Wrote an article up about that. You can check that out over on the homepage at bangthebook.com. Tons of stuff. That matchup data section, absolutely fantastic. If there's a game profile or game preview, that has been written, we do add that to the matchup data page, so you can check that out. Stats, trends, year-to-date numbers, home favorites, road dogs, all that type of stuff in that matchup section. Really, really good resource for you if you are looking for more information for your handicapping. And look, that's what we bring on this show, man. That's all we're about. We want to bring you information. We want to educate you on these games, on these betting angles, set you up for success in this industry. Another thing that you can set yourself up for success with is by getting the best number that you possibly can. If you don't have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, you want to make sure that you do. They are an independent shop now. So they're going to have numbers that other sports books aren't going to be able to offer based on the needs that they have. They don't have anyone telling them, hey, move this game here. Hey, move this game there. They don't have that. They are independent. So that's a very, very important thing for you to have as part of your handicapping repertoire. So head on over to DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up. Check it out. Check out the live betting site. Look at the betting interface. Talk to customer service if you want. Look at all the betting options that they do have available. If you decide to deposit over there, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino if you decide to, if you decide to add funds over there. So those are two very important things that you can take advantage of over at DSI Sportsbook with that promo code BTB and the number 25. All right, we've got about a week and a half left of the baseball season. We haven't talked too much baseball here. Our show listener counts have been going up, so maybe it's a good time to talk a little bit of baseball because on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we don't have anything else to bet unless we're betting soccer or something to that effect, some sort of European sport. We don't have NFL. We don't have college football, at least not yet until Maction starts. But still a lot of considerations out there in the baseball betting market. A few things I want to suggest to you. The first is, as a general rule in daily sports like the NBA, like the NHL, I'm a situational handicapper. I look for bad situational spots. I look for spots in the NHL where you're going to see backup goaltenders, where you may not get the best effort out of a team, stuff like that. I think in the month of September, late September specifically, you can find some of those spots on some of these teams. You know, a game that's kicking off here in a little bit, for example, Oakland and Detroit. Lots of situational elements to this game. I've been looking to fade Detroit in day games because, you know, this is a team that's been awful since the All-Star break. Absolutely awful. Their competitive window is closing. They have some contracts that are completely immovable. They're going to be in line for a rebuild. When you play the night before and then have to get up and go to the park early the next day, not a particularly great situational spot for you. Well, Oakland, on the other hand, finishing up a long road trip, they head back home, play the Texas Rangers here on Friday, off day tomorrow. They're happy to get that off day. You know, you're traveling a long way away from home. It's a lost season for you. So two dueling situational spots in this game. I think Detroit was the right side with the line movement there, but that's an angle that you want to look for. You know, the Cleveland Indians, for example, are playing out west against Anaheim and Seattle. I will not have any interest in playing Cleveland on Sunday. I will be looking to fade Cleveland on Sunday. Don't even know who the pitching probable is. Don't care. If it's in the target range that I'm looking for, I will fade the Indians on Sunday. Why? Because they're wrapping up a six-game road trip out west. They're going to be at home the final week of the season. They're going to be at home to start the playoffs here in all likelihood. So it's not a great spot for them on Sunday. You can find these situational spots on teams that are dealing with long travel. Excuse me. Just because at this point in the year, everybody's tired. You know, these guys have played a lot of games. If you're in the playoffs, you're storing up to go to the playoffs. If you're not in the playoffs, your season's over. You're ready to get home. You're ready to spend some time with the family, spend some time with the kids. You play 162 games in 183 days in Major League Baseball. That is a hell of a lot of games. And I know that pitchers don't play every day necessarily and all that. You got muscle injuries. You got guys that are just beaten down mentally. It's a very tough mental game because it's comprised of individual matchups between batter and pitcher. So guys are just tired at this time of the year. So if you can prey on some of those spots, you know, a team that gets an emotional win, look to fade them the next day. May not have a whole lot there in the reserve tank going into the next game. Look at a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates, for example. They've lost, I think, 12 out of 13 now. They've scored 22 runs in those 13 games. This is a team that made the wild card game three straight years. They didn't last year. They did in 2015, 14, and 13. This year, it's a lost season. Could see some changes at the changes with the manager, could see some changes with the personnel in general. You know, that's one of those spots where Pittsburgh's been a good team to fade over the last little while, and I have been doing that. I have no interest in playing Pittsburgh in any way, shape, or form. Facing a guy making his first major league start today, gonna play the Brewers. And I talked about that in my picks analysis piece over at bangthebook.com. But I have no interest in playing Pittsburgh. I just don't. You know, there are a lot of interesting angles here at this time of the year. Let's look at a game like Kansas City and Toronto, for example. Jake Junis, a guy that's going to be in this Kansas City Royals rotation next year, probably going to be their number three or number four starter behind Duffy and maybe Cahill. you know, that's a situation where this is a guy that's looking to keep making an impact. He's come up since he got recalled in early August, and he's pitched really well. So those are guys that you want to back, guys that have fresher arms, guys that are in a groove, guys that are pitching with a little bit more motivation, not just veterans that are out there getting their work in. You know, a guy like James Shields today pitching for the White Sox, he's just getting his work in. You know, he's not – yeah, maybe he wants to improve upon what has been a bad season, but he's just out there getting his work in. But in that Kansas City-Toronto game, the other guy, the guy going for Toronto, Brett Anderson. Brett Anderson, a guy that made his major league debut in 2009, he's only worked 729 and two-thirds innings, but he keeps getting work because he has so much potential, so much upside. A lefty with a high ground ball rate, doesn't walk a whole lot of guys, highly sought after commodity, right? Well, this year he's only made 12 starts. So there's incentive for him here to be healthy over his last two or three outings, to go out there and look pretty good, get himself guaranteed major league money for next season. So you've got two pitchers that are highly motivated in that Kansas City-Toronto game. So for me, I look at the under. You know, I look at a situation where you're probably going to get the best effort out of both of those pitchers. Maybe you don't get it from the position players that have been playing all year long. You got two pitchers with fresher arms here. You know, they should have an advantage over the offenses. So get another one, Washington and Atlanta. Gio Gonzalez shows some huge signs of regression. For those that haven't followed my Major League Baseball handicapping throughout the season, I'm a big believer in sabermetrics. I look for regression in those advanced metrics. Gio Gonzalez has a lot of them. Low ERA, high FIP, high XFIP, low batting average on balls in play against, high left on base percentage, looking to fade those things. Well, Gio Gonzalez also, with his last start, kicked off his vesting option for next season. So now all of a sudden, he's not a guy that has to worry about next year. He's got that financial security for the following season. Nationals, not a whole lot to play for. They're locked into the number two seed. They're not going to make up 4.5 games on the Dodgers. So this is one of those situations where I'm looking to fade the Nationals here tonight. You got a pitcher in line for regression. You've got a situational angle on a team that doesn't have a whole lot to play for, wants to just make sure guys are healthy for the playoffs. Maybe you don't get a balls out type of effort. You know, so these are the spots that you can look for here in late September. And a lot of times I've just kind of given up on September in the past. You know, you've got lots of different lineups with call-ups. You've got lots of different starters that are out there. Sometimes it can be hard to evaluate some of those minor league numbers. But this year, you know, I'm finding that I'm having more success deeper into the season here in September by looking at it in with more perspective, you know, in terms of looking at it by still using the numbers, but looking more at these situational elements that are out there. And there are a lot of them. You know, every time you look at a game, there are some situational elements out there at this time of the year because everyone just has different motivations. You look at a team like the Colorado Rockies, for example. They play a day game here today against the Giants and Matt Moore. Normally, I would fade Matt Moore. I've been fading Matt Moore all year long. He's given up tons of hard contact. But Colorado, struggling. They have a one-game lead now on the Milwaukee Brewers for the wild card. So all the pressure in the world is on Colorado. That is not an easy spot to be in when you're a team that hasn't played under pressure since what? Probably 2007 when they made their World Series run. So that's one of those situations there where, you know, Colorado has a lot to play for. You probably see that in the lines with some, you know, inflated prices, but all the pressure is on them. That is not a comfortable spot to be in when you're not a team that has been in that spot in the past. They've got a first-year manager in Bud Black who's done a very, very good job. But again, Buddy Black, a guy that, you know, hasn't been in that pressure cooker type of situation. Will he put players in positions to succeed? Will he deploy the bullpen properly? And the bullpen has had some injury issues as we've gotten later into the year. So I'm not on the Giants, but I'm off of the Rockies because of a situation like that. So in September, you can see a lot of these situations develop. You'll see them tomorrow on Thursday with getaway day games. You'll see them on Sunday with getaway day games, Monday as well. You know, so those are angles that you can look to exploit in the Major League Baseball betting market. You don't even have to necessarily know a whole lot about these teams, know a whole lot about how they've done to this point in the season. Just take a quick look at the standings, consider the pitchers, consider the motivations for the pitchers, and you can go from there. You know, think about it. Even a spot tonight. John Lester is not a good matchup for the Tampa Bay Rays. Rays are 25th in weighted on base average against left-handed pitching, highest strikeout rate in baseball against left-handed pitching, and yet we're seeing Tampa Bay money come in on this game on Blake Snell. So again, It's a bad matchup for the Rays lineup, but money coming in on the Rays. Why is that? Well, John Lester's a veteran, you know, probably expecting that, you know, he doesn't go out there with a whole lot of incentive. Cubs are up 3.5. Blake Snell's pitched well of late, you know, so lots of different angles here to consider across all of the sports betting markets. But a lot of people probably put baseball on the shelf, probably forget about baseball once football starts. I think there are opportunities out there. And again, you don't have to go crazy with this. You know, you don't have to play 3% or 4% of your bankroll on these MLB plays. Just look at the market, look for some things you can pick up on for future seasons, and try to get yourself, you know, a unit here or there for football. Now, cover some of your football losses because you're going to have them. We all do. Cover some of your football losses by making some smart baseball investments. Make some low-risk baseball investments just to keep, you know, that bankroll going, keep yourself invested in some things, keep your mind sharp, but make some smart plays. There are some smart plays out there. There are some lines that are just off at this point in time because the bookmakers and the risk managers are far more worried about the football betting market. NFL, you know, one NFL game is probably going to draw more betting action than every game on the MLB card for today. That Rams 49ers game tomorrow will probably draw more betting action than the entire MLB card for Thursday. And, you know, what are they going to pay attention to? What are they going to focus their time and energy on? Football. So baseball will offer up some more opportunities here, I think, as we go over the next week and a half of games or so. I'll try to preview some playoff stuff once we get to that point. Again, time kind of limited here on the shows with the regular recurring guests that we have. But you can always check out my MLB analysis over at bangthebook.com. Or just hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Happy to answer any of those questions for you. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com joins us for this week's Powers Picks segment. Then also Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join us Friday. Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. My Bang the Book podcast entry off to a 2-8 start. I'm pissed off. I'm frustrated. I'm disappointed. But, you know, we're going to keep grinding here and keep looking for information and try to pick some more winners here this week. Sports Cheeto will join us for that. About some ideas off of him. We'll talk a little bit about the Super Contest card and what's going on there with that handicapping pool. Then also on Friday, Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.